Did you guys see the Ugga last night at the beginning of the game?
Sleeping.
Like sad. Yeah, he looked sad and tired, and I thought that was kind of a bad omen for the Bulldogs yesterday, but I also kind of thought that was a bad sign for like anybody watching. It's just like, oh, so like it's gonna be a field goal game and they're gonna show me a sleepy dog that just kind of makes me want to stretch and just like call it a night. I mean, I'm sure you don't experience this out west, Clinton, but I feel like damn, I'm only talking to June here, I guess, June.
East
But the
Coast
yeah, it
bias.
made me sleepy. Made me feel like
East
this
Coast
game was
bias
not going to
showing.
be exciting and it was going to be the perfect image for it. But turned out the second half, they don't show the dog, we get a good game.
I got into bed last night. It was 9 p.m. It was awesome. And I watched the whole game.
Unbelievable. It was probably like 68 degrees out too, huh?
Correct. It's like 75 right now.
Clinton, it's 2 degrees in New York today. There's a
what?
Polar vortex.
Wow.
Polar vortex.
Yes, it's like a mix of like cold temperature and just like swirling winds. So like when I was taking my morning walk today, like you can't feel your face when you're walking outside.
This is why I'm
kind of those are phrases that I've heard like in the distance and the times, you know, maybe with the Weather Channel on, but I have no idea what they mean.
They're all abstract concepts for Florida and LA people. Yeah. Good Lord.
Sorry about that. All right, what do we got to start us off here on Debatable? I'm Izzy. There's Clinton. That's June. ICJ, they call us. They don't call us that, but let's talk some football.
All right, guys. We're going to start with the national championship game from last night where Georgia took down Alabama. And our question, is Bryce Young right to blame himself for Alabama's loss?
Well, Bryce Young was probably had the game of his short career in the SEC championship game, lit up Georgia defense that we hadn't seen do that again. And so it kind of felt like he had to come down to earth a little bit in this game. Not only the rematch situation, Georgia probably switching things up, but also maybe it's just some bad luck. And that's definitely what happened in this game with a couple of his main receivers going down and him in the second half of that game basically having his receivers let him down. And I think this was Bryce Young being a leader, not necessarily a guy who, you know, was a freshman, a guy who's beyond his years, and taking it upon himself because he's going to be here a couple more years. But I certainly don't look at this game, or certainly didn't finish that game thinking, man, Bryce Young would have won it if it wasn't for that guy.
Not at all. And I think that, like, I'm not going to get into a whole argument with Dogs fans about the competitive balance, but let's be clear. This game changed entirely after that injury that was non-contact from a psychological standpoint, from a personnel standpoint, and it opened the door for Georgia. I mean, and good for them for taking advantage of it. You know, Stetson was a kid that had never played on a big stage like that. He came up huge, obviously, in his own barn. I don't think it makes any sense for Bryce Young to blame himself whatsoever. He played a great game. There were balls hitting guys in hands, Izzy, that they just weren't coming down with. He put every single rock right where he needed it to, in my opinion. And he made some pretty good decisions with his feet, June. I wouldn't blame himself at all.
Yeah, I mean, a guy like A.G. Hall was put in a position that he has been all year. Like, there's points where Nick Saban wasn't even playing him at the beginning of the season, and now he's in a national championship game, and they're completely depending on him for production because Bryce Young doesn't have any other receivers. Jameson Williams obviously goes out. John Metchie's not available for this game. Like, this was already kind of a weak point for Alabama this year in terms of just kind of the weapons that they had for Bryce Young. And I think it's part of why Bryce Young was able to be a Heisman Trophy, you know, quarterback this year, because so much of the offense ran through him. But when you have Jameson Williams coming into the game as kind of the only source of offense that you have, and then you lose him, like, I think Clinton's spot on in talking about kind of the psychological effect that had, where it just takes the air out of that locker room, where the offense just looked a lot more flat in the second half than it did after that injury in the first half. And I think that it had a massive effect. And on top of all of that, like, you can't discount the fact that Georgia had an incredible defense throughout the course of this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bryce Young, I think, is doing the very quarterback thing to do, being very stately and being like, it is on me, I take the blame. But I think anyone.
But you're right. His security blanket was gone. And you see that number there after Jameson Williams left the game. Young went 1 for 8 for 28 yards, 2 interceptions on passes that went 20 or more yards. So it very much sort of condensed the offense a little bit and didn't really let them open it up some. And so it is funny, though. There isn't really one thing you can point to. Not that you usually can. But, you know, the first half was quite different from the second half. And that first half sort of reminded you why that Georgia defense was such a huge factor. Like, keeping Alabama out of the end zone. Alabama had, you know, a couple of chances, first downs, I think, inside the 20 twice, and didn't you know, couldn't finish with a touchdown. And that, I feel like, sort of gave Georgia life because it felt like that offense was a little constipated too. And then in the second half, it's just like, wow, you got a big 67-yard run to kick us off. And then Stetson Bennett probably took advantage of his receiver, a great receiver there, wasn't a great throw, but made a couple of big plays. And then all of a sudden, it's an entirely different look of a game in the second half that requires Bryce Young and those receivers to make plays, and they couldn't do it.
Can I say something? We all know and love Elle Duncan, obviously. She reps the Dogs. But
she's going wild last night. Did you see the videos on Twitter?
I saw the videos, but I had no idea that I knew this many Georgia fans. I mean, my TL was just overloaded with people who were apparently diehard Bulldogs fan. I never knew. I'm like, is this just people from Atlanta? Is this people who went there? What are we doing? Yeah.
Because is this the Klay Thompson situation? Is they secretly America's sweetheart, the Georgia Bulldogs?
You know,
did we not know this?
I was like, there's a lot more love being shown for this team, which is a fine seat. You know, I mean, listen, Georgia's as cool as any other school in the SEC, but I did not realize that there were this many people walking amongst us that cared so much about Bulldog football. But good for them.
I also wanted to take this opportunity, speaking on that, Clinton, to apologize to Elle, because I predicted that Alabama would win this game 31-13, and she responded to my email with, June, LOL, period. And I was just like, I could just feel the attitude coming through the email. I was like, oh, man, I really disappointed Elle right now.
For what you don't know is that I responded to that with Bama by a zillion. I didn't even take it seriously. She was not happy about that.
I had Georgia just because I thought Georgia looked like the better team in the semifinals, and so maybe thought that would carry over. But Stetson Bennett is such an interesting story. You've got all these quarterbacks going everywhere, you know, even after five stars and successful first season somewhere, just going through the portal and trying to find the right spot. This guy, a walk-on, transferred to the junior college, came back to Georgia as a backup, got the starting job, lost the starting job, got the starting job, won a championship. And he didn't really look like... Yeah, he didn't really look great doing it either. So I guess, you know, it's one of those things, hey, quarterback, a win's not a quarterback thing, you know, just maintain what you can. But, like, it felt like there was a lot of pressure on this guy, especially after that SEC championship game, and it felt like he delivered, at least after halftime.
He had
and after
one
that
huge
crazy
throw.
Fumble.
Yeah. Anyway.
Even in that first half, like, they weren't trying to ask him to do too much. They were kind of asking him to do 5-yard passes, 10-yard passes, and you know, there was not a lot of success, obviously, but he really only needed to, after that, being able to mentally recover after that fumble, which was obviously such a kind of controversial call. And I think you can kind of go either way on how you view it, but to be able to mentally recover from that after Alabama and Bryce Young come back and score and be able to be mentally composed enough to make a throw like that to carry the Georgia offense when it has been struggling, when Alabama does have a very good defense, it's really, really impressive. And I think, you know, even I don't expect Stetson Bennett to have like an NFL star career at all.
No.
But to have the kind of composure to be able to do that is something that is going to make him a legend for Georgia football fans for the rest of his life. And more so than any other college quarterback who doesn't need to buy a beer in his college town for the rest of his life, Stetson Bennett is going to need that.
Wow, look at all that. Look at that
list. Five quarterbacks. Mac Jones, Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, Trevor Lawrence, and Deshaun Watson, the last five QBs before Stetson Bennett to win the national title. Those guys, I don't know, maybe Stetson does have a future in the NFL. I mean, you guys hate Tua, and he seems to be there. I'm curious what you guys thought about that fumble recovery. Not just the call, because it felt like the right call, but the casualness and the accidental non-fumble. Like, if Alabama would have won in a close situation and that would have been the absolute turning point, it would have been just the most accidental great play on that fumble recovery. Because nobody thought that he had that.
I thought it was
The right call too.
It was the right call on the back end with the ball coming out of the hand. There was a late angle where it just appeared to me that I mean, I'll give the refs a lot of credit there. A lot of people think that they were trying to screw Georgia, but the hardest part about refereeing to me is just getting it right in real time. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And to be able
yes.
to see both of
nobody
things,
thought that was right, Clinton. Nobody
know,
saw that, right? And then we should stop the game and applaud the referees when they get
I'm
those
saying.
Great calls right on the first try.
You know, and it didn't hurt that our network had 8,000 cameras there that could show you every single angle from the roof to the side to the underneath. That was really genuinely helpful in that situation. But yeah, I'll give kudos to the refs in that situation. They got it right. And it was hard as a call, but I thought ultimately it was correct.
It felt like a spiritual cousin to the tuck rule. I mean, like, As the guy was like going out of bounds, like collecting what like he I don't think knew was a fumble.
No chance he knew that.
There was no chance because he was walking around like this. And I said this on Twitter last night. Like he was a second semester senior who had already gone to college. Like he just like didn't care. There was no sense of urgency. Like no one was around him either. Like I'm not sure that anyone realized what had happened.
But he still got in bounds. I feel like some internal football clock. You know how like when you're a basketball player and every time you walk by like a door you hit your hand on the top, you know what I'm saying? Like I feel like for certain football players, like, oh, you're walking out of bounds, get your feet in right quick, and then you keep going no matter what you're doing. Like it was instinctive, and it was an unbelievable play. I still can't believe that.
Well, I think that might be a Saban like coaching thing, because this is true with Belichick too, and I think that they're very much spiritual coaching cousins, where it's like they always teach their teams to play out every single play as best as you can. And this is one of those instances where like this has to be something that's like just years, you know, months and months of practice being drilled in, where it's just like, I don't know if that this is a thing, but like, hey, at the minimum, like stay in bounds.
Pick up the ball, stay in bounds.
It's like one of those things that I think is instilled in players across sports that adds up over the course of time, where it just becomes instinctual. And I think that's ultimately like why Saban has been such a great head coach for such a long time.
Then I don't even know if he tried to keep that foot in bounds. I think that foot just happened to stay in bounds, and it was just a blade of grass in between him and, you know, an out-of-bounds situation.
I mean, I don't think he cared if it was out of bounds, but I think he looked down at his feet and just, and instinct, just like, oh, let me get that back. Because it was like a little move, you know what I mean? And he got it down. I don't know.
It's like when players are running off the baseball field and everyone's always skipping over
the line.
Like, it's
yeah,
just,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of.
Did you guys, speaking of all the cameras over there, Kirby Smart, there's a couple of images of him that were funny. One, the jumping, where it seemed like he jumped really high, but I'm pretty sure just sort of tucking the knees or tucking the feet kind of make it look a little bit more impressive. And the timing of the jump was good, not necessarily the effort. But him running back also with that pick and the pick six, I believe he was trying to tell him to go down, which didn't really make any sense. Yeah, it didn't really make any sense, but it seemed like he was telling him to go down. But if you guys didn't see that, then that's fine.
I saw that.
The image of him jumping, I thought, was a little overstated.
I saw his mouth moving, but I wasn't paying attention. Reminder, Kirby Smart was a DB, okay? This guy can get up a little bit. It's not like he's a non-athletic fat guy. You know what I mean? This is a man who's moved around a little
bit. Former, definitely former DB.
Too. Yeah, it's true. Mm. I'm just saying. Just saying. He can get up. You know.
Do we think Georgia, so if they really were the sweethearts of college football and we really didn't know it, are they now going to be sort of, I don't know, maybe a dynasty type where if they can win it with Stetson Bennett, well, heck, if they can get, you know, some score on the right quarterbacks, then maybe they can beat Alabama regularly.
Maybe. I mean, that's what a national championship does for you. It makes the average elite player take you more seriously. You know what I'm saying? And that was always the problem with Georgia. You know, they always seemed to have some guy that was kind of just off the path. You know what I'm saying? In terms of like who was leading them, obviously by evidence by Stetson, who, you know, came from such a deep part of the, you know, sort of the recruiting world. But I mean, Georgia's a popular school. I think this makes Georgia more popular, but I think it makes Kirby more popular too, because he's a fun character. You know what I'm saying? I think ultimately we came out of this with like, oh yeah, that coach is pretty cool. Like, you know, I mean, we sort of got used to the deadpan of Saban, but Kirby's not like that. He's actually just a regular fun, like, you know, kind of dad that might let you booze at his house in high school. You know what I'm saying? Just don't tell your parents kind of situation. You know what I mean? I mean that sort of jestfully, but he seems to know how to have a good time while keeping things in proper order.
A question I have for you guys, though, based off of Kirby, is how do these, like, elite – how are there so much – there's, like, a higher concentration of elite college football coaches that have names like Dabo and Kirby that just, like, don't exist in other sports. How does this happen?
Well, Dabo is not his real name, but, I mean, like –
but, like, you know, yeah. it's part of the thing,
what is Kirby short for? Is it short for anything?
I don't think so.
Kerbert?
Kerbenstein? I don't know. But it's the South, bro. You know what I'm saying? I don't know how much time you spend down there. People got wild names, man. That's just the country. That's how it works.
Well, it's alumnus of another SEC East school. I really hope that they don't just run over and win four of the next five titles. What do you got, Charlie?
So, Izzy, you said that Kirby Smart's football days were long behind him, right? And you are still an elite black football player. I would just like it to be noted that he is just 2 years older than you.
All right. Okay. So he too would be on the back end of his flag football career if it was still available to him. But clearly,
I can't wait for Kirby Smart to show up to your league with like 8 former Georgia players, and he's like, "We got next." You know what I'm saying?
Great.
And they fling it around, and tear you all up.
They probably don't even know the rules. He's going to get flags everywhere. I think we got this.
Fair enough.
All right, guys, ready to move on?
Yes.
Yes, please.
All right, next topic. I think we can all agree that the Grizzlies have been scrappy. They've been plucky. But now they've won 10 in a row, or 9 in a row. And if Ja Morant and the Grizzlies win their 10th game tonight against the Warriors, do we need to start viewing the Grizzlies as a real threat in the West?
I was just speaking to a good friend, George Sedano, on the phone yesterday about other good friend Zach Harper's power rankings on The Athletic. And, you know, he had the Bulls a little too high for our taste. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, team's better than the Bulls. The Memphis Grizzlies. Like, this team is, the way they're winning, regardless, it seems like, of whether Ja Morant is in the game or not. They have literally the biggest win in the history of the NBA this year by margin. And that was without Ja Morant in there. They have, I mean, a variety of players that can give you 15 to 20 a night, and they defend. And I think Ja Morant's sort of a great leader to have, not only like brings up the spirit of the team, not only, you know, is an amazing player, but is willing. It's almost like a little bit of grit and grind Grizzlies in him, you know, that lives in him somewhat. And so I think this team is absolutely, I say, on the verge of contender status, because I'd like to see, you know, a couple of games like this against the Warriors. I think they have it in them. I think they've already beaten a lot of great teams, but I'd just like to see it, you know, over the when people are paying attention, basically, and see if there isn't something that we've all been missing.
I love Ja Morant. I mean, like, he's been so exciting to watch his development over the course of the season. Like, he's added a little bit of a mid-range game in the paint this year. He's become a better passer since his rookie year. The thing that I think has jumped out for me when I look at the stats about what happened with the Grizzlies when Morant was out was that their three-point percentage really, really jumped up in a way that is almost a little bit unsustainable. Now, that being said, like, I'm not really here for Izzy's Chicago Bulls slander, because I think that team is better than a lot of the media has been talking about over the course of this year.
Not slander. It was building up the Grizzlies is what I was doing.
There's been, like, a consistent, like, Chicago Bulls shade that you've been putting out there throughout the course.
I mean, look, I don't mean I want to prove to people that I can tell the future, but, hey, they're a tough second round out. Let's keep going. You know,
but I do
and
think
Billy Donovan's one of my favorite people in the world. Okay, so
the Grizzlies really do have like an exciting young core between like Desmond Bane, Dylan Brooks, Jaren Jackson. Like Jaren Jackson, like I think really turned up when Morant was out. Like I think this is an exciting young team where I think Morant has the ceiling of being a number one on a championship team. Now, I think the question is whether or not the supporting cast is going to be able to get him there. Bane was, as a Celtics fan, I really wish that he was on the Celtics because he was picked at the end of the first round, traded from the Celtics to the Grizzlies. But he's been awesome for this team this year. I mean, Dylan Brooks has been awesome. I think the question really is with this Grizzlies team is like, I think that they're going to be they're going to be in a really good position to have home court advantage throughout the course of the playoffs. I mean, if you look at the rest of the teams on the standings right now, I think that this is a better team than a lot of the teams below them. And just considering the injuries, stuff happening with teams like the Clippers, like what's been happening with the Nuggets, like I think Memphis is in a really good spot. Like I kind of look at them similar to where like the really young Oklahoma City Thunder were like in the early 2010s in terms of just like the level of pace and excitement that they bring. But I think a lot of this is going to be dependent on how that supporting cast around Ja continues to grow. Because I think, you know, we can talk all we want about kind of the Ewing effect about whether or not Memphis has been better without Ja. I think that's kind of bogus and baloney. But I think the real question
bogus
is like...
Bogus and baloney. That's when you know it's nonsense.
But it's going to be completely dependent on how the supporting cast around him, around Ja as the number one, is going to develop as we move forward here.
Shout out to Ian Eagle real quick, who, when Desmond Bane was lighting up Brooklyn in Brooklyn, just dropped Bane terrorizing Gotham. Just amazing call.
We showed his
splits a second ago. He has been great for this team. And without Dylan Brooks for, you know, what, most of the season, right? Or at least coming up, Dylan Brooks offensively, not the greatest, but defensively really brings that team up. I'm wondering, you know, you look at them as fourth and you say you've got the Suns, the Warriors, and the Jazz ahead of them. I mean, the Jazz, I don't want to say that they don't scare anybody, but they did just blow a double-figure lead to the Detroit Pistons and then lose by double figures. You know, if they have this showing against the Warriors, if they show to be that gritty team that kind of is the counter to exactly what the Warriors offer, like, I don't know. Like, I'm willing to say that they are at least a contender, because if they're in that top three conversation, then why wouldn't they be?
I totally agree. The Suns are better than they are, and the Warriors are better than they are, and that's it in the West. You know what I'm saying? There might be as good. There might be night to night a win. But when you come to the overall attitude of that team, I mean, the thing that impressed me a lot, they played the Lakers the other day, and LeBron lost the psychological battle to the daggone Memphis Grizzlies. He was hot, talking about stop talking S and why don't y'all keep your mouth shut. I was like, oh, the Grizzlies out here, you know what I'm saying, with the original loud
immediately mouth cue all the tweets of LeBron dancing when he was a Cleveland Cavalier on the sideline, by the way.
That you know what I'm saying? And that's not to diss LeBron. It's just that, like, I think that for all the things people thought about the Grizzlies, plucky, whatever, whatever, it wasn't easy to look at them as a team that was just cold going to get you out of your game. You know what I'm saying? And on the road at that, like, I was really impressed with that. So they got a little bit more in terms of, you talk about people aren't scared of them like the Jazz. I think people are scared of the Grizzlies a little bit. You know what I mean? And the Lakers are one of those teams because Ja keeps popping them. It's remarkable to see.
And Ja's the kind of guy where, like,
rating. That's surprising.
And John's also the kind of guy from, like, a psychological standpoint where it's just like, when he wants to take over a game, he's going to take over.
And there's
just not that many guys who have that kind of – can tie that, like, mindset and the skill set in the way that he does in the NBA, especially given his age. I mean, just watching the play from the other night where he was able to block a basketball with two hands at the size that he is, like, there's just a – he's just always kind of – his athleticism is just always looming over a game in a way that I think is incredibly unique. Like,
unbelievable.
The only player that I can kind of compare his athleticism to is, like, really young Russell Westbrook. And, like, their games are also very different. So, like, I'm not comparing their games, but the kind of jumping ability and the ability to just kind of ram your head in and take over a game, I think is very comparable in terms of just mindset to a young Russ.
I think it's Derrick Rose-like, young Derrick Rose athleticism, where it just springs off the floor. It feels like Russell was more of a physical, for some reason, athleticism, and then Ja just kind of shocks you by it. It's more springy a little bit, and then you But, you know, after watching that, there was some, I forget what site it was, that showed a bunch of two-handed blocks again that pinned against the backboard. Not even close to as impressive. Like, it even stands out of some of the best of all time. Like, not even close to that impressive.
Do you guys want to know how T. Morant, Ja's dad, trained him to have so many hops? I know this because I did an E60 story on Ja, and I went to his house in Dalzell, South Carolina, which is in the middle of nowhere.
Well, let me stop you there before you give that answer, because whatever this is, it's not going to make just anybody jump like Ja Morant. Okay,
no,
so whatever this training thing is, it's not the secret to being able to do that.
It is far more simplistic than you think. For all these people who have all these crazy personal trainers, yada, yada, uh-uh. So T built a court in their backyard at their house, which is, you know, it's nice enough. It got the job done. But what he also did is he had these huge tractor tires. And so he would make Ja jump, just do box jumps on these tractor tires over and over and over, because he couldn't dunk in like 10th grade. And it was like a problem. You know what I'm saying? So that's how he taught him to do it. And now he's got the craziest hops in the league, arguably. I wish he was in the dunk contest. I wish.
His hops,
I haven't decided
too.
That yet, right?
No, but he wasn't last year either. That's why, or whatever, the year before. That's why I was thinking about it.
The thing with the way that Ja jumps, too, that always jumps out to me, pun intended, is that it looks like he's being, like, held up by a string. You know, like, someone's just, like, pulling him up higher and higher and just, like, how high can he actually go?
Yeah. It's a good question.
Yeah, it's like he has his body can just do anything while he's up there. Like, I might just twist around, I might just kind of flail, I might spread my legs and cross them again. It's just like he's got full control of everything up there.
There's like a levitating
effect. Yeah, like he's up there by a string.
When he's jumping.
Right. Elevate, then decide, as Ann-1 used to say.
So,
what do you got, Charlie?
I got a question for you guys. Back to the Grizz in sort of a greater sense of it. This is probably the deepest roster in the league, with guys like a Dylan Brooks, a Tillman, a Desmond Bane, a Brandon Clark, a Kyle Anderson surrounding, you know, Triple J and Ja. Their window might be sooner than we realize, given the way that Ja plays and Triple J's injury history. Is this the year that this team sort of goes all in and tries to trade for a third star? Do they do a 2-for-1 or 3-for-1?
Yeah, it's funny because I was thinking about, like, you know, these guards that come in and just by year three have sort of applied themselves. They're basically a superstar. And how much they can carry their team is still, you know, that becomes the frustration of the franchise. Like Dwayne Wade, for example, it's year two, Pat Riley sees it, okay, get me Shaq. And I think with Ja, it's going to be eventually, hey, I need that superstar, I need to make that deal, but I don't know if it's just yet. I think you need to finish that 1 year of with as much feel good and as much build up as possible. Like I think of, again, Dwayne's rookie year, frankly, where you had Lamar Odom and Caron Butler, and that year was a spectacular second half of the year, and then you build those guys up to, hey, I can now trade you for Shaq. And so I think a stretch of a half, you know, of a year where they, you know, create a team that, you know, wins at a 55 win pace, I think probably isn't enough of a big picture, enough of a sample size to get you that other person, or frankly, prove to you that you even need that other person, because I don't think there's anything overwhelming yet, at least as far as they look and look at the landscape in the Western Conference and say, yeah, we can't get past that. That's probably, you know, a young team's overconfidence, right. But I don't think there's anybody that's on that team that says that at the moment.
Are you saying they still need to establish Grizz culture, perhaps?
Perhaps. I mean, I just think they have to establish the fact that, I mean, that, yeah, that these guys can stay healthy over the course of a year and that they can contribute to not just, you know, a fun team, but a winning team. And they have so far, but I think over the course of a season, yeah, probably haven't convinced enough people.
There's also room for growth here, too, I think, where Ja could still get better at shooting threes. And if Ja adds a three-pointer, like, he gets so much harder to defend on the perimeter. Like, he's already a really hard guy because he's got, like, such a big array of spin moves and dribble moves. But if he adds a three, like, it becomes way harder to defend him, and I think that it opens up the potential for a guy like Jared Jackson to, you know, be better offensively, and it creates more space for Desmond Bane and Dylan Brooks. Like, there's still room for growth here. Like, I think that this is a team on the upswing. This is not, like, the pinnacle of what Memphis is going to look
not
like.
Not at all. I agree.
All right, what's next?
All right, guys, it's time to play a game.
Oh, it felt like okay. Game time.
And that game is Whodunit. It's a game where we'll give you a quote. You guys get a minute to come together and tell us who done it. First quote. I personally think, as somebody that's played the position, I think Kyrie's the most skilled player that's ever played that position. And your choices are Chauncey Billups, Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, or Izzy Gutierrez.
The one person you can immediately rule out is Steve Nash, because he's not going to say that. And for those who don't know, I was more of a two guard than a point guard, so I probably didn't say
guard,
it either.
Sure, right,
yeah. So it's between A and B, yeah.
I mean, this is an interesting list because I think I know who said this, but the other choices are not bad. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I think there's a reasonable argument here. I don't love Kyrie, but I do think that he brings something to the table that you don't see guys at the NBA level use that skill set like that anymore, and it's kind of a very, like, I don't know, he reminds
it's
me of guys
because they don't
that,
have it.
That's what I'm saying, but he reminds me of guys that played point guard in the Big East in the 90s, you know what I'm saying, in terms of, like, his sort of,
Rod,
you know, the
Strickland,
way his,
but
the way his body moves,
3.0.
Right, there's a Rod Strickland element to him, but Steve Nash was a good player, and so is Jason Kidd. I mean, this is interesting.
June?
I think if you just look at, like, an ego standpoint, who's most likely to be humble enough to say this? I think it's Chauncey.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'll go with Chauncey.
I personally think
all
that
right.
That's somebody that played the position. I think that Kyrie's the most skilled player to ever play that position.
I also think there's something to be said for this coming from Chauncey. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. Big Finals shot. MVP, All Star, right. Big Shot Bob. I'm Big Shot Bob. Big Shot Chauncey. But for those of you,
Bob I think
Charlie put this on the rundown because I've been saying a couple of days in a row, I think, that Kyrie is a top 5 point guard of all time. And of course, everybody's just going to beat me up because he does not have the accomplishments of a top 5 point guard. I should probably say he's a top 5 skilled point guard of all time. But then again, I'm kind of with Chauncey here. He might be the most skilled point guard of all time. Go ahead. Hit me back.
No. I mean, who are all these other top 5 point guards that have all these other things that Kyrie doesn't have? Like, who's not like Isaiah? You know what I'm saying? Like,
I also think from a skill set standpoint, like, recent NBA history, like, is AI, like, kind of – he's kind of one of the only guys who has the dribbles that Kyrie does. Like, there's not a lot of people that you can compare to Kyrie in terms of just, like, the acrobats, the athleticism, the showmanship. Like, the skill set. Yeah. If we're just taking accomplishments out of it, just from like a putting a guy in a vacuum, basketball vacuum, like there's not a lot of competition in my eyes between. No. I mean, just kind of Kyrie and AI.
Yeah. Chauncey's not the first person to say things like this. You heard Andre Iguodala saying he's probably top 20 player all time after that top 75 list came out. And in terms of like handles, Allen was quick as heck and had the crazy crossover, but he does not have the dribble package that Kyrie has.
Not at all.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Okay. Obviously, the handle, the sort of Baryshnikov element of Kyrie's game is unmatched. But if we're evaluating his greatness, we can't look at the skills in the vacuum and throw out accomplishments. We can't throw him ahead of Isaiah and Magic and Steph Curry and Oscar Robertson. The man hit one shot.
Hold on. Yeah, but those are...
There's two different conversations happening here.
Those are completely different conversations. You know what I'm saying? And not to mention that, like, his skill set as a shoot... I mean, I don't know. I think there's a reasonable world in which Steph Curry is in a... Steph and Magic are in kind of a different conversation as far as point guards are concerned in terms of what they bring. I mean, maybe that's just me, but I see Kyrie in a very specific sort of space that I wouldn't even think to compare those guys to him because it's just a different thing. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
Well, Charlie speaks to the reason why people are disappointed or people don't want to put Kyrie up there is because he's got all this skill and has not really made the most out of it yet. It felt like, you know, after he won his title and escaped Cleveland, that he was supposed to elevate a team as a number one guy, and he didn't necessarily do that. Didn't do it in Boston, and we really haven't seen it much here in Brooklyn. But look, I just look at the ability and I say, yeah, it's pretty much unmatched. Like the handles, the ability to get the shot off anywhere, the shooting ability, even off the dribble. And like, nobody blocks that dude. Like if he's near the rim, like he's going to find a way to get that thing up and in. And this is why people, you know, call him a god. Like I think it was James Harden, you know, he's a king or whatever. Like basketball players, you know, game recognizes game and they love this guy because he just, you know, rolls out of bed and can give you 40.
He's Uncle Drew.
That skill.
Yeah, and I also think, too, that, like, the fact that kids gravitate towards Kyrie so much speaks to just kind of this, like, skill set that no one else has in the NBA. Like, there is a certain thrill to just watching Kyrie Irving highlights that I think is very unique. I think it's a different conversation from, like, you know, the GOAT conversation where you're considering accomplishments and the highlights. You're considering the full package. When you're considering just the talent – and what it's like to watch that player in a vacuum, Kyrie is up there with, like, the legends of the NBA.
I mean, the part where I think the people, like, the basketball reason where people are just going to just kill me, not just the accomplishments, but just, all right, point guard is part of the discussion here. Like, is he a great passer? Is he even a willing passer necessarily? Like, I think he likes to show off his ability with the ball. I think he has those passing abilities. I just don't think he's really shown them off much. What do you got, Charlie?
Who's a more skilled point guard right now, Kyrie Irving or Nikola Jokic?
Okay. Oh,
this guy. Jokic is a good passer. Might be a better passer right now.
And a better shooter.
I think those are different questions.
Yes, like, you put Nikola Jokic as a point guard on your team. I put Kyrie Irving as a point guard on my team, and Kyrie Irving will look damn good.
I'll pick Kyrie in that situation. Playground pick him? Yeah, I'll pick Kyrie. For sure.
If I needed someone to, like, pass to save the world, I would probably take Nikola Jokic.
To save the world?
I would probably
like if you needed an assist. Help us, Nikola. An assist.
You're our only hope, Princess Leia, out there with the hearts.
You have to find the open guy.
That's funny.
All right, what else we have?
We got another quote here. Some of these players are born in the 2000s. In the QB room, I ask questions about Wedding Crashers, and they don't know that stuff. And the choices are Matt LaFleur, Robert Saleh, Kyle Shanahan, or Daryl Bevel.
All right, before we go to ages here, like the people who constantly quote Wedding Crashers drives me insane.
Is that a thing?
Like, I saw that. Yeah, I mean, I know it is in my age group. Like, I've seen the movie one time. I don't remember a bunch of quotes from it. I didn't think it was that great. It was a funny movie. But people who, like, quote it all the time and expect and are largely disappointed when you don't know where it's from, those people bug the heck out of me. So one of these persons here is not my favorite coach.
So this line, I mean, the line that matters from Wedding Crashers is crab cakes and football. That's what Maryland does. The only person on this list I can even think of.
You're on the list, Clinton. I don't like you now.
Well, listen, the only person I can even think of that would say something like that is Kyle Shanahan in terms of, like, just who they are. You know what I'm saying? Maybe Robert Saleh, but, you know, he's I don't think he's in a position to be doing stuff like that right now with his team. Kyle's the most sort of established, you know what I mean, that he's going to be making jokes with the squad like that. He just seems like a guy. It's
either C or D. I'll go with C. We're out of time.
I think Clinton's logic's pretty spot on here.
Not at all.
Hey now.
I wish I could say yes, but I mean, some of these players were born in the 2000s. So it's you like to think so, but every day, quarterback room, when I ask certain questions like being wedding crashers and stuff, and they don't even know that sometimes.
I mean, and he is the exact bro that quotes wedding crashes all the time that annoys the heck out of me. So, yeah, he's on my list.
I also say this as the resident child of debatable. Wedding Crashers is fine. Like, it's, yeah. There's so many better movies than Wedding Crashers from that generation.
It was part of a run of movies that were really good in a short space, and I think a lot of people just loved it, and it stayed in the diaspora, but I don't really...
I think that's what makes, you know, folks like Kyle Shanahan think that it keeps them young by quoting that movie, and it really doesn't. Like, there's no reason for, you know, when it came out, there's no reason for, like, a 10-year-old to say, hey, I'm going to watch that in a few years. Like,
if Kyle Shanahan really wanted to connect with people from the 2000s, like, he would be talking about, like, Anchorman and, like, Talladega Nights more than Wedding Crashers.
See, those strike me as the same general movies. Those are
they're in the same time frame, aren't they?
They have a cultural cachet, though, that I think has lasted longer than Wedding Crashers.
I don't know, Jujun. This might be one where you're a little short on experience here. Those movies are all kind of in the same general regard, I think, especially with Talladega Nights involved. Like, I don't know. I mean, they're all there for me. Anchorman's probably bigger than both of those, though.
I learned a little, I think maybe in the last 3 years, that I think the most relatable is not even quoting movies anymore. It's quoting like short clips or, you know, viral videos or anything like that. Like, those are the more relatable things, right? Like, more movies than a quote from a movie from 2000, whatever.
I got a question for you guys.
Yes.
Is Kyle Shanahan the Wedding Crashers of coaches?
Well, I mean, I could see Kyle Shanahan crashing a wedding. I would crash a wedding with Kyle Shanahan. More specifically, that's probably the best way for me to put that.
Are we talking about like the status of Wedding Crashers among those movies where it's overhyped and it's fine because
it's got like one specific skill?
I would probably go there. I would tip towards that line.
Okay.
Yeah, and he kind of feels like a young coach, but he's not really.
No, he's not. I mean, McVay's younger than he is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so okay. He does wear the snapback though, which I like. He looks like a skater, like literally. So I love that. I love this, by the way. Music band. It's so funny.
It's time for another game.
What do we got?
A game is What Are the Chances? We'll show you a clip and you tell us the chances. First one. All right. So before the season, the Panthers picked up Sam Darnold's 5th-year option. And we have Matt Rhule talking about it here. And our question is, what are the chances Sam Darnold will be the starter for the Panthers next season?
Yeah, sorry, I'm texting my mom who's trying to figure out how to watch the show. That we made bringing him here to be the starter, you know, knowing that if he had a great year that he would be a high price guy. And if he's a starter at that number, that's low-end starter money. So that was a decision made. It was a collective decision, and you know, I can't have much more to say.
Come on, say something good.
Get it out.
Say something good.
That was so weird. Like,
that is not a confidence inspiring answer.
Well, I mean, beyond that, forget about who he's even talking about. He just sounded like he had no clue what was going on with his own team, which was so weird. It's like, yo, this is.
He basically said, of all the quarterbacks we have, Sam Darnold is one of them.
Right.
Like,
you know
that's
what I mean?
It.
And he just couldn't come with anything nice to say.
When you're reverting to, like, the potential value of someone next season as, like, an excuse for keeping someone around, like, you're not even talking about his, like, skill set on the field. You're talking about, like, how he affects the economics of the team. It means that you're in a bad place.
Yeah.
That's definitely a head football coach's version of, come on, bro. Like, what am I supposed to say? Like, I think we all tried to get a guy at a cheap number as a starter who maybe didn't fulfill his potential somewhere else. But come on, bro. Like, that's basically what he should have said right there.
Man, I really thought that guy was going to be a good player, man. When he was at USC, he was really exciting. That did not happen. Sam Darnold.
So you had LA biases before you even got to LA, didn't you?
No, I mean, he was an exciting player. You remember that game against Penn State where he drove down and beat him? He looked like a pro as soon as he was a freshman, and then it just didn't pan out. Not to get off all on this, but I say this all the time. Quarterback development is at a premium in the NFL. He's a perfect example of a guy that got into the league and just did not get better.
The thing with Darnold, though, is that, like, when he got to USC, he was hyped up as, in a similar way that, like, Matt Barkley was hyped up when he got to USC as, like, this high school quarterback god.
Yeah.
And then he was, like, pretty good, but not quite like a quarterback god at USC. And then both of them got to the NFL. And Barkley was worse, obviously, I think, right, in terms of draft status than Darnold was. But it was, like, it was kind of just like a whoopee cushion of, like, a QB development situation. Where
Darnold,
like,
had moxie, though. That's what mattered.
I'd say 18%. I don't think it's very good. 18% because he makes $18 million.
Yeah, I'll say 25.
I'm at like 17%.
There's really no payoff on these, is there?
No, not at this point. We got to find a new game.
Charlie just gets to write in the corner.
Also, when you're clamoring for Cam Newton to come in during the season, like this version of Cam Newton, right, like, come on, you know?
Right. It was supposed to be his sort of comeback story or, you know, recovery and all that stuff, and then it ended up being Cam Newton having a better story than Sam Darnold.
Sure. I mean, an $18 million is a lot for a backup, but if I'm the Panthers, I'm at least bringing somebody in to make it a competition in this in training camp, for sure. You know what I'm saying? Whether or not that ends up meaning I have to put Sam on the bench, I'll just wear that. But I don't think you can reliably depend on him as your starter for the whole season. I just don't.
All right.
What else we got?
Last one. Got another clip here on this one. What are the chances Hassan Whiteside was being a good teammate for apologizing to Mike Conley?
I love this clip.
What happened here?
I love this clip.
Oh, I've seen this. Yeah, and he just doesn't even play defense.
So good.
Like, what is he doing? What happened? He's like, my bad, dog.
He's like, my bad one time, and then my bad the second time. It's like,
I mean,
play's over.
I'm genuinely wondering what he was thinking there. Like, did he think there was going to be somebody trailing that was going to get banged on, that he was going to get dunked on in the middle of the key? Heat lifer, that's hilarious.
I mean, that is the whole Hassan Whiteside experience. Like, if there was ever sort of a villain or an antagonist to Heat culture, it was Hassan Whiteside. Like, and it was the biggest challenge for that organization to make it seem like he really wanted to win or to play hard or anything else. Like, once he got his bag, it felt like, all right, now he's just going to be himself. And, like, I think he's actually sort of made a decent name for himself in the league. Like, okay, the Heat overpaid him, but he's not the player that got sort of sent to the streets from the Sacramento Kings. But this is always going to be a part of the experience. It's always like a fuse just kind of goes out, and it's just like, oh, wait, we're still playing basketball.
Wait, was Hassan Whiteside the one who had the incident on the plane with the gummies?
No, that was Deion Waiters.
That was Deion Waiters. Okay.
To Izzy's point, I think this is like, you know, the clip of JaVale McGee like running back the other way while the play is going on. Like, this is a personality defining clip for Hassan Whiteside. Like, when you think of Hassan Whiteside, like, this is the kind of thing that you're pointing to. Because, like, when you watch that play, it's almost like what happens when, like, you're trying to check a text message while you're playing 2K. Like, that's just, like, why is he just standing around that not looking at the basketball?
I'm telling you, I think he
that's
thought.
Exactly right.
I'm telling you, I think he thought that, first of all, there was somebody else coming down the lane. I mean, I think he just thought it had a different assignment, but it was still stupid because that other player was right next to him. Like, that didn't even make sense. He
definitely gives you a defensive breakdown in my career of 2K, right? Absolutely.
It's when you lose like negative 300 points for like a defensive breakdown while you're playing my player. Like, that's exactly what that is.
By the way, I'm going to go ahead. Yes, I'm going to say wrong. 100% also, because there was probably a time in Hassan's career where rather than apologizing and giving up the dunk, he would be yelling at his point guard while also giving up the dunk. So I would say 100% he is being a good teammate here.
Yeah, 100%. Like, he was trying his best here. He was really, really trying his best. It just, like, was misplaced.
What that is,
also,
different discussion.
Speaking of different discussion, put Rudy Gobert and Hassan Whiteside on a team in 1984 and see how many games they lose. Like that, when the big man dominated basketball, like the Utah Jazz have two of those guys, and that's probably why nobody's scared of the Utah Jazz.
Mark Eaton.
All right, guys.
Do you know who Mark Eaton is, June? June, have you ever heard of Mark Eaton? Do you know who that person
no,
is?
No, I have no idea who that is.
Google Mark Eaton right now. You're going to get – is he?
Mark Eaton?
Google Mark Eaton right now. Go straight to images. You're going to get a delightful image of
Mark Eaton.
80s
okay.
basketball wow. in its full glory.
We lost Mark Eaton last year.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah,
the
right?
facial hair?
This guy was a hoss, dude. He was quite the character in the league for some time. I
wow.
love that.
Gigantic. How do you not know who Mark Eaton is? Wow. What year were you born, June?
1995.
Yeah, you still should know who he is.
I had a feeling.
Very disappointing.
I didn't start following sports until like 2003.
Yeah. Makes sense. Mark Eaton. Big, tall dude. Rest in peace.
All right, guys. We got one bonus topic. One bonus topic.
Oh,
it's a tweet from Long Live the Queen. And it's a quote from Izzy. I personally think as somebody who plays flag football, you to ever play that position. From Izzy.
Oh, long live the Queen. So
that
funny. Also, accurate quote.
Oh, okay. Okay. When's the next time you guys play? Are you still mid-season? What's going on here?
No, we are preparing for our annual tournament that we host, national tournament called the Sunshine Cup, which is in late February. And I'm sure everybody's interested in it as the countdown. Flick those pages any faster.
I just wanted to say thanks to you all because I got boosted yesterday, so I'm kind of playing hurt. So typical energy wasn't there,
game.
But I appreciate you all. Little bit of a flu game, you know what I'm saying? So I'm going directly back
rumor
to
sleep. Rumor has it. Sources tell me you might have had a little bit too much fun on Sunday.
That was the day before.
Leading into
separate
your booster
matter.
Shot. Mm-hmm.
It's Tuesday.
Really got to hydrate, boys and girls, before the...
Why would you do that?
Hydrate before the booster. It'll mess with you. Bye.
It will. I'm going. Night-night.
Get some confetti.
Hydrate before the booster.
Hey, it's first...